Hello, it's Heather from the Sunshine and Power Cuts podcast. In association with Geeks Rising from the 10th to the 16th of August or 11th to the 17th if you're here in New Zealand, we are hosting the second 2019 Sunshine Summit. It's a week of live streams with amazing content creators and their communities with the theme of celebrating connections. All of the details for the upcoming summit, as well as replays from our previous events and where the live streams will be happening, can be found at sunshinesummit.live. A huge thank you to the patrons of Sunshine and Power Cuts for making it possible. So check it out, and if you know our guests, we'd love for you to come and celebrate with us. And if they're new to you, come along and learn more about them, and we look forward to celebrating connections with you.
I'm Willie D. Nelson from All Things Good and Nerdy, a pop culture podcast, part of the Gunna Geek Network. Just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other tantalizingly geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, the show where we look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. I'm Chris, and today I have Zach Jenkins from Battle of the Atom. Chris, you are not Chris. That's me.
No, that's your name, man. That's your name. I'm Zach. We've met. We've talked several times. I'm from a different podcast, though, and that's okay.
Well, Zach, why don't you tell us a little bit about that different podcast? Because it's going to wrap into this episode really well.
It is. So my name's Zach. I, with my co-host Adam, run a podcast called Battle of the Atom, where we go through three different X-Men stories every week and rank them on our master list of every X-Men story ever of all time from best to worst. It's very long. We've read some really good stories that we've fallen back in love with and some terrible stories that haunt me in my nightmares. And we just talk about them, and it's fun, and I like it. Because I like X-Men, and I've played video games in the past.
And he's not just being biased. It is a really good show. You should go check it out.
No, I'm being biased, too.
I mean, yes. He is.
Yeah, no. No, just go over, look at the show. Maybe my link will be in the show notes. Who knows? But type into that Podcatch app that you already have open. Be like, Battle of the okay, it's right here. And then just queue up the next episode. I don't know what it is. It'll probably be good. We've had some good episodes.
They're pretty much good by default.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Speaking of things that are not good by default, today we're looking at X-Men Mojo World.
Yeah, okay.
Which, the Mojo World in itself looks pretty cool.
I like the concept of the Mojo World from the X-Men comics properties. This Game Gear game from 1996, I don't like. I think I hate it, actually. It makes me sad.
Well, let's start with the good things first, then. What's up with the Mojo World, anyway? Because most of my experience with it is the two episodes it was on the animated series.
Well, look, that's one of the best depictions of the Mojo World. But to talk about the Mojo World, we have to talk about Mojo. Mojo is one of the spineless ones. He is a large yellow blob who does not have any bones and sits in a chair that has spider legs and a scorpion tail. And he's in charge of the Mojo Television Network, which is a giant media conglomerate that beams into multidimensional television sets and gets everyone to watch Mojo's TV program. He is used as a not subtle riff on any sort of media boss that the X-Men writers want to rip on at that given moment. He has an entire world that is constantly in fight with rebels. It's called the Mojo World. It's pretty fun. It's normally used for pastiches of television things or very bad puns, sometimes at the same time. So yeah, that's the Mojo World. It's fun. It's just not necessarily what this game is.
Well, I guess part of it is it important to the greater X-Men universe? In the comic world.
This is like a third tier X-Men thing. This is definitely on the... it's definitely on the sidelines. Because it's not hated and feared stuff. It's not general superhero sci-fi nonsense. It's something that's almost uniquely X-Men in that I read a decent amount of comics and there's very little that's like this out there and like what you can do with the Mojo World story. But in a very real way, like, you take the Mojo World out of X-Men, you don't lose much. Anything that comes from the Mojo World that's like important, which is essentially just Longshot and Spiral, who are two characters that I like, you could definitely make come from anything else. And like their origins are not what's important about them. So yeah, you would lose Mojo, but he's not, I love him. He's not your top tier X-Men villain.
Let's take a look at Spiral and Longshot, though, because that's, I mean, Spiral we've looked at kind of a little bit with Children of the Atom. Hey, there's a connection there.
Yeah, she's got six arms.
But Longshot we haven't seen at all, at least not in the context of this podcast.
And not in this game either, which is weird for a Mojo-themed thing. He's a very nice, very lucky guy who is, he is a clone of his own son. Which I didn't expect to talk about the Daddy Boros today, but this is where we're at. Longshot has a son named Shatterstar. He has several swords. He's very, very tough and a very good fight boy. He went back in the past and helped Dazzler give birth to himself and then sent that baby into farther in the past. And then a guy who helped create Mojo stuff cloned him. Clone Shatterstar to make Longshot. Man, I tell you what, comics are wild. Longshot's good though. He's just very nice. He's lucky. That's his whole gimmick. He's a nice, happy, lucky boy. And like, he just, if he wants a good thing to happen and it's for a good reason, it'll probably happen. He also has hollow bones and only three fingers on his hands. So that's Longshot for you. Though I will say he is the example of every 90s comic book design, even though he's a mid 80s character. Art Adams designed for him, essentially, if you look at what like Jim Lee, Mark Silvestri, The Rob, I guess, the Todd, all those guys, they were pulling directly from Art Adams' Longshot design for what you think of as the 90s look. It's that Longshot design, but turned up to like 11.
Do you think the three fingers was on purpose, or is that just like an art mistake that stuck around?
No, I think Art Adams did that on purpose. I don't know why. I think it was just to make him seem more alien, because Longshot's supposed to be like kind of a weird alien thing. He was never even supposed to be connected to the X-Men, which is kind of, that's the one interesting thing about the Mojo verse. It first appeared in a 6-issue miniseries that Anna Senti and Art Adams did that introduced Longshot and Spiral and Mojo. But it was supposed to turn into an ongoing or a second mini that just never really happened. The sales were fine, but they weren't there. Also, Art Adams, beautifully gifted artist, has never been able to keep up the pace for a monthly book. Like, that's just he's a slow artist, and that's fine. So that project kind of fell apart, but they tapped Anna Senti was the editor on Uncanny X-Men at the time, and Chris Claremont and Anne were friends and said, well, if you guys aren't going to use Longshot and Mojo and Spiral, can I? So he did, and now it's all intricately connected to the X-Men.
Oh, that's so cool. I mean, the weird little connections on that is part of why I've started to fall in love with X-Men.
Oh, I love that. The one advantage that specifically shared universe superhero comics, you know, big two, Marvel and DC, have over any other type of medium is that it's an ever-evolving, massive story over just 50 to 70 years now. So you get these weird things because, you know, this connection might have only happened because two people shared an office or they were friends. Like, to pull another example, like, there's a tie-in with the X-Men and the Asgardians Thor stuff. And the only reason that tie-in exists is because Walt Simonson and Chris Claremont and Louise Simonson were all friends. And they were like, hey, Walt, you're doing the iconic run on Thor that will never be matched. I'm doing the iconic run on X-Men that will never be matched. What if we get some of this peanut butter and this chocolate? And then you get one of the most beloved X-Men stories of all time that continues to be referenced even up to some of the most recent stuff in Uncanny X-Men today.
And what about Spiral? Because really, literally the only thing we really talked about last time was that she has six arms.
So Spiral used to be a stunt woman named Ricochet Rita, who was loosely based on some of Ann Nesenti's own character traits. She was Longshot's friend and helped him lead a rebellion against Mojo, and then she got mind wiped, and her entire sent. She got attacked by Spiral, who was actually Spiral from it. She was actually her from the future. Guys, the Mojoverse gets weird with timelines, and I can't help that. It's not going to be clear. Anyway, she turned herself into Spiral, who became a slave to Mojo. And that's weird. She was a surrogate mom for one arc that was pretty decent. But mostly she's just this cool design, this mystical character. And she's just fun. She always shows up in Mojo stories because, frankly, you need someone to fight. You need a tangible force for the X-Men to go up against because Mojo is a very large blob of thing, and he's not fun to fight against.
I mean, for anybody who hasn't seen him, it kind of reminds me of a younger Jabba the Hutt with better coloring.
Yeah, he's got that vibe to him. He's just... He's like if you took a thing of Play-Doh out of the tube and just plopped it down somewhere and let gravity do its work for a bit. He's just a glob of yellow Play-Doh, and I love him. What's funny, I've got a three-year-old, and we found a Mojo toy at a used toy shop or something like that. It's the 90s, I forget who is making it, and it's going to kill me that I don't. Toy Biz, the 90s Toy Biz Mojo action figure. My son's in love with the super creepy design, and he has these weird spinally hands that are like overextended. He's got some real creepy elements to him. Like he has clockwork orange eye things on his eyelids, always pulling it back and always having him smile. So he has this kind of eerie design. So you, even though he's normally written as a parody, he has this undercurrent of menace to him that really works well for the character.
And then looking over onto the hero side of new people to talk about here, we have Shard and Havoc.
So let's start with Havoc. Havoc is Scott Summers' younger brother. He shoots stuff out of his arms and they're lasers. He's normally a bit more headstrong than Scott. He's not as thoughtful of a leader. And he has a bit of a chip on his shoulder. He's an interesting character, not my personal favorite. And there's probably a reason why he's always been relegated to like the B list or the C list. But he's a pretty fun character in his own right, and you can do a lot with him. In this game, he's just another body that shoots lasers, so they could reuse some of the same assets that they were using for like four other characters.
I mean, we never said the Game Gear was the tip top of technology. Because it's not.
The Game Gear was bad, actually. Let me ask, did you ever play a Game Gear, Chris?
I did. I actually still own one on purpose.
Yeah, so... Do you? Oofta. Hachi Machi, man. Because here's the thing that I always experienced with the Game Gear. Because I had a friend who had a Game Gear. We had two games for it. We had, Bubble Trouble or Bubble Burst, whatever the one where you shoot, it's like kind of a Tetris-y puzzle game that you shoot balls and puzzles. It's very famous. You know, it has dinosaurs. And then Sonic. Now, the Game Gear took, I think, 6 AA batteries.
Yep. Ridiculous.
And that lasted about an hour of battery, if that.
I think we're giving it too much credit there.
Yeah, so it was a mobile system in that you could technically play it on short car rides, but it was a stationary system in that you kept it plugged into the AC adapter at all times because there was no way to use that 5-pound system otherwise.
That thing is a monster in all the wrong ways.
It's very large. It has the form function. It's like if you took the original Duke Xbox controller and you stretched it into like the size of a Wii U tablet and then put like a 2-inch screen on it.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it's not good. Sega did a bad there, and they should regret it for all times. I mean, they stopped making mobile systems after that for a good reason.
So let's not forget about Shard, who the only thing I know is Bishop's sister.
Yeah, okay, Shard's the reason I wanted this game. It was like, Mojo Shard, I'm here for it. Shard is Bishop's sister. Here's the thing, Shard died.
Okay.
Shard died before Bishop came back into the X-Men's past. Bishop's a time traveler, you all know that, right?
At this point, I'm just imagining that the entire X-Men timeline is about as straight as the headphone cord pile on my desk.
Nah, it's all a mess. I would love to like sketch it out at one point because it's just like all the important timelines and how they all work together and who came from where. Oh, it's an absolute disaster. But so Shard's Bishop's sister, she died because they went into a hive of vampires. And she died because she was a cop in a bad future. And then Bishop went back to the past. And it turns out Shard got saved as a hologram AI and then just hung out with the X-Men for a while. It wasn't very clear. But she has ostensibly Bishop powers, which is to shoot lasers. And she's cool and she's fun and I like her as a character a lot, but she doesn't get some of the attention that some of the other characters get. Like, her only major run was in X-Factor, but, like, the tail end of X-Factor when, quite frankly, the book was atrocious.
I feel so bad now that you picked this game for a character and the game is that bad.
I mean, look, I kind of expected it. It's a Game Gear. But I do love Shard. Shard's a cool, underrated character. She's got green hair and like just a cool design. They did some interesting things with her being a hologram, but though most of the time she's just a laser shooting character, and that's unfortunate.
Pew pew. I'm sorry, pew, I couldn't pew. Help it.
Well, look, this game has Cyclops who shoots lasers out of his eyes, more or less. Havoc, who shoots lasers out of his hands, more or less. Shard, who definitely just shoots lasers out of her hands. And Gambit, who technically throws charged playing cards, but in effect in this game, shoots lasers out of his hands.
Well, we're going to walk around the house trying to find different things that shoot lasers while you listen to some promos for a few other shows.
Who will you find on the Chimera?
Light-eating space monster.
A 7-foot-tall heretical catman.
The human hacker, gadgeteer, and technophile.
A galactic lawyer from the wrong side of the Akashic bleed.
A living financial instrument.
Sort of like a rhino centaur, almost.
Hamster people.
Chinchilla people.
Chinchilla people, excuse me.
The bog witch of Zed.
The honorable Lord Mayor.
A bright red mustachioed land manatee.
Technicolor werewolf guys.
Janelle Monáe.
Yeah, she's Janelle Monáe. Exactly. This is the halfling Janelle Monáe.
The Chimera. Unexpected characters in unlikely situations.
Hi, I'm Dan.
And I'm Jake.
And we're the Supersons, a podcast centered around DC Comics, where every other week we break down two stories to make the DCU a little more accessible to new readers.
You can find us on Twitter at DC Supersons.
And you can download the show anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Those are some great shows you should check out, but first let's finish up with this one. So,
absolutely,
Zach, Game Gear.
Yeah. Game Gear's bad, actually. It's so bad.
There's a reason why I hardly ever talk about the Game Gear ports of games. And then now we finally ran into one where I have no choice.
They're just... So this game came out in 96. And that's the thing. In 96, the Game Gear was on its last legs.
Do you know what else came out in 96?
Like, the Game Boy Color... Was it comes out 96, 97?
Something like that.
What came out in 96?
The Sega Saturn.
Sega Saturn, I've literally never played, and it makes me sad because it had good fighting games and nothing else.
I have one sitting like 3 feet away from me.
Is it fun? Is it well? Is it happy? Is the Sega Saturn happy?
Well, right now it has Children of the Atom in it, so it's very happy.
So it's very happy. Heck yeah! Why did I talk about that game? That's like a Tekken, but with X-Men.
Because I had secret plans. For Miles.
Yeah, that's fair. You and your highfalutin profile guests or whatever, I get stuck with this Game Gear garbage. But no, it's fine, Chris.
Hey, you picked it all by yourself. We'll get you for something better.
No, I picked X-Men Legends 2 Rise of Apocalypse, and you said, yeah, we're not covering that for 5 years.
That is true. I'll let you have X-Men Mutant Academy. That's a joke. I've played that one.
Oh, man. Okay. Wait, that... Okay, you joke about that, but I do have access to play GameCube games. Oh, and I do like fighting games. I assume Mutant Academy is bad. I rented it once. Yes. I did rent that once with some friends from the local... It might have been a Family Video at the time, which is one of the few video rental chains still available. But yeah, Children of the Atom was better than Mutant Academy.
To be fair, Children of the Atom is better than a lot of things.
Well, Children of the Atom's just they said, hey, let's do a Street Fighter. Let's do Street Fighter, but put Wolverine in it. That's not going to go wrong, right?
And no, there's like no way. It's so beautiful. As long as you don't play the PlayStation version. We're getting off track.
We are getting a little off track. We're talking about a game we'd rather be talking about than this abomination. Because this game's weird. Because it's... Okay, so hold on. This game says it's Mojo World, right?
Right. It does say that.
There's no good indication that this actually takes place on Mojo World. Until the game over screen. Which, by the way, this game gives you a new life every level, but a new character... you can only die once per character. So it's absolutely brutal. Because some of the characters, like Wolverine, sucks. Wolverine has no range, he has bad jumps, and the platforming in this game is atrocious. I went from this to like Hollow Knight I was playing on the Switch, which has amazingly fluid platforming and all this stuff. And I was like, nah, this game won't even let me like double jump and move forward in the same direction. It also took me 20 minutes to figure out I could double jump.
I mean, he does have a healing factor in here. I'm trying to find good things.
Does he?
He does.
I missed it. I was too afraid, because like any good X-Men game, you have to turn on your mutant powers, and I was afraid to turn on his mutant powers.
Yeah, if you leave his mutant powers on, they drain.
Yeah, and I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to lose him. I wanted to save him for the boss fight against the Warwolves, which, again, boss fights in this game are bad. So I guess what I was saying when it was everything in this game is bad, let's be clear. But when I was saying it's weird that it takes place in the Mojo World, the first level is Uncanny X-Men like 135, where Wolverine is in the sewers of the Hellfire Club and he's saying, okay, Bubs, you had your best shot. Now it's my turn. And it's a really cool scene, and this game takes all the gravitas out of that.
I mean, you're just walking around in the thing, and there might be some things you recognize, maybe.
There's Hellfire Goons and the concept of a sewer. And then Warwolves. Warwolves are this weird Excalibur thing.
I'm going to assume that they don't live in the sewer.
They don't. They lived in the zoo for a while. They're from Mojo World, to be fair. So that was a tie into the game. But they have nothing to do with the Hellfire Club arc. So that's weird. And then the second arc takes place on ostensibly Genosha, but there's American flags everywhere. And that's like not what Genosha was.
Well, now that just makes me think it might have been an Olympics tie-in.
It could have been. For people who don't know, Genosha was an apartheid state against mutants. So maybe not what you want to be, flying American flags on.
We'll just let that sit there.
Yeah. What a choice.
We're not going to go there.
Yeah. The rest of the game I didn't finish because it was very frustrating. And I did watch a YouTube video instead. But it's got some weird stuff. Like Magneto is just there. There's Sentinels that show up for no reason. And then it gets weird because Fitzroy, who is also from, he was dating Shard and then was Bishop's like rival / enemy. He's there. And then the last level is the Agent, who is like a one-off Mojoverse character who I kind of love because he tried to sign the X-Babies to a contract. You know the X-Babies, they're the baby versions of the X-Men.
Oh, it's been a while since I've seen anything with them, though.
Yeah, they're the X-Men Muppet Babies, and they're adorable, and I love them. Anyway, Mojo sent the Agent to try and sign them to the Mojoverse, and then, he's in this game, which is, I'm going to guess, his only multimedia appearance. And then Mojo's there. Yeah, it's got to be close. But then Mojo shows up, and you fight him, and you get a pixel art scene of all the X-Men looking out into the sunset, and that's it. There is, this game is skin and bones.
I mean, it is a Game Gear game. That's all they could do.
But, look, you say that, but, like, at the same time, you had things like, Not a Link to the Past. What's the Link's Awakening on the Game Boy came out at the same time. Like Pokemon came out at the same time. So good games could happen on mobile systems. Even like if you want to just go straight platformers, like there were ports of like the Star Wars games at the same time that were very much side-scrolling action platformers, but still handled the fundamentals better than this. This game messes up on moving and punching and jumping, and that's all you got to do.
One of the other things this game does is it's a lot more linear than any other X-Men game that I've looked at so far, except for maybe Uncanny X-Men, which I really just want to pretend doesn't exist.
Yeah, it gives you on some of them the options of several paths, but it only goes one way.
It's not really separate paths as much as it's like Sonic the Hedgehog, take the upper or the lower route.
And even then, they railroad you into one of those routes by the end of it. It's just, this is a rough game. It's hard, there's not a lot to it. It's weird to talk about because like, I want to say more than it's a game that has some levels dressed up as X-Men things, but that's all it is.
So here's the other thing about it, though. This might be the first X-Men Game Gear game I'm recording, but it's the second one that actually got made. So it's not like this is them trying to figure out how to do X-Men.
No, they just reskinned Game Master's Legacy, which is another weird thing just to follow up on for... I guess that's... That was 95, so that's tied into exactly what was going on in comics at the time, or at least at the time they would have been developing it. But that's another weird X-Men deep cut.
And I haven't played the game for that one yet because I haven't needed to yet because I've been holding off as long as possible. Mostly because I'm scared it's going to be like this.
Also, Spider-Man and the X-Men Arcade's Revenge was ported to the Game Gear, so I think this is all built off of the same engine.
Well, I mean, there's our explanation of badness right there.
Yeah, they started with bad, and then they just kept going.
This whole game experience, it's just, it's a weirdly put together game. I mean, you look at it and on the surface, hey, here's these six characters you could be. But at the beginning, you can only be Rogue or Wolverine. Because of course you can be Wolverine. It's the 90s.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, he's the face.
And Rogue's not a bad choice. I like having her as a starter instead of Cyclops.
Yeah, because Rogue can fly, which gets you out of so many problems. Because you don't have to jump over things in this game that's bad at jumping.
But then getting those extra lives you were talking about earlier is just rescuing a character. Like, Gambit, you get in New Orleans. Makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
Cyclops, you get at Cape Citadel. I mean, I guess that makes as much sense as getting Cyclops anywhere else.
Yeah, unless you're going to pick him up from an orphanage. Which, look, I would like to see Sinister's evil orphanage level. That would be a good one, actually.
That would have been a really good level, because the whole premise of this game is Spiral is putting them through the X-Men's most terrifying villains.
Oh, is that the premise?
It is.
Didn't tell me that. Yeah. I played the game. No one mentioned that to me.
So here's something me and Zach were talking about earlier, is the fact that when these games came out, they came with manuals that people actually read. And I found the manual online. And I didn't tell Zach because I'm a meanie doo-doo head.
Yeah, I didn't read it at all. I would have. Look, is there like any interesting art or anything in that manual?
Not really.
Okay, then I don't need to read it.
Game screenshots.
I keep telling myself I need to read every X-Men thing. And I don't need to read every X-Men thing.
I mean, I've learned nothing that's useful outside of the game by reading the manual.
That's fair.
I also don't recognize any of the names in the credits, which does happen every once in a while.
I mean, look, I have not read many game credits from 1996, so I would be a bad resource on that one.
To be fair, I look at them all the time for this. It's the only reason I do.
I guess that's a good point.
I mean, you get to go to a Sentinel factory to get Havoc, which, again, it's not an orphanage.
It's not.
It's also not Havoc, his...
Like, he had a family. It just wasn't the same family as Scott. They got adopted separately because the U.S. adoption system is broken.
Also because X-Men.
Yeah, I mean, look, probably more that second thing, if we're being real.
I mean, it's a reason for things on purpose.
Yeah, it is.
And then, of course, the possibly coolest character in the entire game, which is the reason that Zach really wanted to look at this one, you get Shard right at the end.
Yeah, it makes me sad. It makes me sad. You can at least use Shard to fight Mojo in their classic duel from Never, so. This is the type of game that makes me okay that licensed games aren't as prominent as they were when I was a teenager. Because this was just a cheap cash-in. There was nothing put into it, nothing to try and make anyone happy. It was to make a grandma feel like she did a good for a five-year-old on his birthday. And that's it.
If I was five and I got this game, I'd probably be really excited.
Yeah, no, I played a lot of very bad video games when I was younger. This would have been one of them.
If I was six or seven and I got this game, I'd probably start to be really disappointed.
Yeah, like the moment that you've played like a Crash Bandicoot and you say, oh, wait, that's how jumps work? Then you realize that this game did not achieve anything. Like, guys, I'm not even joking about how bad jumping is in this game. Sometimes when I'm pushing forward and jump, it doesn't go forward. It goes straight up in the air. And I don't know why.
So here's another thing, weirdly, too. The start button. Logically, what does that do in a game?
It starts.
Yeah, starts, pauses, all that kind of fun thing. In here, it turns on and off your mutant powers.
Which, look, I get they only had three real buttons to work with besides the D-pad. So you got to do something. And they decided to go the Metroid route of turning on your missiles with the... I guess Metroid used select, but still. They didn't have a select button here. It just... It's cumbersome. It doesn't work. None of it lays out right. They got too ambitious, and they made three of these dang things? Nah, guys.
It really, I don't know what they were thinking. I was not able to find to see if this was planned on being on another system, and then they just downported it. Because it really, I mean, it's too late in the game to be another Genesis title.
Yeah.
And it's way too underdeveloped to be anything newer.
I honestly think they just had the engine for the other Game Gear games and said, well, those sold well enough. Can we throw together five more levels? And the answer was yes, because if you look at the credits, there might not be 20 people who worked on this.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 21, 22, but I also wasn't checking for duplicates, of which I know there's at least one case.
Yeah, so this was a shoestring fly-by-night crew that said, hey, you know what it feels like? It feels like they said, hey, let's run to this store, find whatever issues of X-Men we can, and piece this together. It honestly feels like they got an X-Men classic, they got a copy of some Mojo story, they got something that had Shard in it, and then they just were like, yeah, let's run with this. This is good. This is fine. We can make a game out of this thing.
So this is the point where I need to call on Resident Detective Carrington to find Mr. Paul Hutchinson, who did programming and art and sound effects and design on this game.
Man, look, Paul, I really hope that the paycheck you got from this got you something nice. Because if this was a labor of love, I'm sorry. I gotta hope that this was you just going 9 to 5, and I can appreciate the hustle, brother.
I don't want to sit here and ask you point blank why this game sucks, but I do want to know about what went into making it.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that's super interesting to me, how failures happened. I have a long-standing bucket list of creators I want to talk to on my podcast, not because I love their work, but because I think it's such an interesting failure that I want to see, one, how they feel about it looking back, how they felt about it at the time, and what they were trying to do. Because a lot of the times, I think that how things fail tend to be very interesting. And you get a lot better stories than, well, I had this idea in my head, and I did a really good job at it, and then it's on the page.
Yeah, that story was really boring.
Man, we picked a weird one, guys.
Okay, I promise you, we're going to have Zach come back for something good.
Here's the thing, Chris. I stopped playing video games for a while. I graduated college and just, there was a new generation of systems coming out. And I said, well, I don't want to spend $600 right now. And then I just never did. So I was out of games for 4 or 5 years. And then I got a Switch recently. And I realized, oh, wait, these things are good and fun. And I don't have to worry about multiplayer. I can just play Zelda all the time. So I've gotten spoiled by only playing good games. And, it's a hard come down going from, the last games I've bought were all of Zelda, all of Mario, all of Donkey Kong, Crash Bandicoot, Hollow Knight, and Final Fantasy VII. And then, oh yeah, let's go replay this bad X-Men Game Gear game. I feel very critical because I have enough good stuff that I can just point to and say, no, guys, just do this. Just do this thing over here. Make this perfect game and then just put Cyclops in it. It's fine. You can do it. I believe in you.
This is why I promised to look at everything, because otherwise I never would have looked at this game.
And look, no one else should. This should be the final word on X-Men Mutant World or Mojo World. It's a failure of a game that's not even interesting enough to look at. Watch the 5-minute YouTube video covering it. You're going to get everything you need except for some swears about how you should have made that dang jump. But no, the game's saying you didn't go forward even though you're friggin' pounding the forward button.
Yeah, there's definitely like a 40-minute playthrough. Don't waste your time with that one. I mean, if you really desperately want to see it, yeah, go ahead. It's as good of a playthrough as you're going to find, but you don't need
it. And you know what? That's the best speed run, because no one's ever tried to complete the game otherwise.
I challenge somebody to do it. I'm not going to give you a prize, but I want to see you do it.
No, I'll tell you what. If someone can pull off like a 10, let's say 10, 15 minutes, say sub 15 minute speed run of this game, I'll find them a decent prize. I'll get something.
You know what? I'll help you with that prize. I take back my other thing, and I will help you with that prize.
Yeah, y'all, give me a speed run of this game. I would watch someone trying to like clip through different walls here just to get a couple extra seconds. It would be a very bad speed run thing, but I want to see if someone can do it.
And even if you can't get it under 15, let's see it anyway.
Yeah. Someone twitch this bad boy up. Let's get our speedrun tactics on. You're going to have to double jump over that cliff. You're going to have to just not get hit. And I think you have to play as Rogue the entire time. I think that would be the only way to do it, because Rogue can fly over enough stuff. And your only options from the beginning are Rogue and Wolverine.
And there is a glitch to not use up her mutant powers while she flies. So it can happen.
Oh, yeah, now speedrunning's easy. I take that back. No, I don't take it back. If someone wants to spend the time to learn how to glitch this Game Gear game from 1996, y'all, you deserve it.
I honestly don't think there's much else we can say about this game. I mean, I don't want to ask you this, but I'm going to anyway. What do you think it really gets wrong? The highlight reel.
Honestly, the biggest thing it gets wrong, the most fundamental thing it gets wrong, is the fact that it's not fun. I'm a huge X-Men fan. I have dealt with so much X-Men absolute garbage, and there's a ton of it out there. But I will read horrible comics, read terrible novels, watch abysmal movies or cartoons or anything. I will get through all of that and have a smile on my face because I enjoy it. But this game fundamentally misses any sort of enjoyment out of, you know, what it is. It's bad at being a game. It's bad at being a thing that references all these X-Men that I like. It's bad at having any sort of enjoyment in it. It's just a relic of a bad time, and I'm going to forget about it after this podcast. I'll be honest. It doesn't even make me angry anymore. It said, well, this wasn't good.
I really hope you do forget it, because this game to me just screams somebody had leftover levels from something else. Let's put an X-Men skin on it.
Exactly. It's all it is. And like, if this was a fan project, I'd be a lot more considerate, but no, someone got paid for this. And I really do hope that like helped their kid go through college. If anything good comes out of this, it's that a large company gave money to a smaller group of employees and kept them employed for a time. And you know what? I'm really happy for their fiscal success.
Yeah, this was developed and published by Sega.
Oh man, no, Sega, I liked you guys, but look, you have a worse track record than most people.
So what do you think this game gets right?
Wolverine does have claws. I was able to essentially recreate the panel where Wolverine says, okay, Bubs, you had your shot. Now it's my turn. So I got to do that, and that was fun. And yeah, that's what the game does right.
I mean, I'll throw in the fact that Havoc and Shard exist.
Yeah, it gives attention to some lesser known things, which is interesting, and I wish more games would mine the weird corners of the X-Men, because I think from a game standpoint, like honestly, a Mojo game should be great, because Mojo gives you the framework to say, hey, you want to Mega Man up this game? You want to have a lava world and ice world and not have to write a weird thing around it? No, just say Mojo wanted all this stuff. It's so easy. Mojo could be like Gaben, or Mojo could be Todd. Just write, make a Mojo game where Mojo is Todd from Bethesda, and he's promising all these things to people, and now he's sending the X-Men through it, and you have to break the system. Just like every other Bethesda game, you just have to break it, and it will be very easy because Mojo's a bad programmer, actually. And that would be fun. You could do so much weird stuff while having Wolverine and like maximizing the fact that it's a video game. But instead, we got this very bad side-scrolling platformer.
And then I probably don't have to ask you this, but if you have somebody who wanted to get into either the X-Men as a whole or just the Mojoverse, would you hand them this game as a bit of a primer course?
Oh, absolutely not. I wouldn't hand this game to someone who was an expert on the X-Men as a whole and the Mojoverse and was interested to see how people adapted that to other mediums. I'd say they didn't. They didn't do a good job at it, guys. Don't. It's not even interesting from an academic sense.
I mean, the only thing I think anybody could really learn from this game that they couldn't pick up from anything else is here are these few characters that haven't been in any other game that I've looked at. And the only kind of person I would hand this game to is somebody who had every single other X-Men game and they wanted this one to complete their X-Men game collection.
Yeah, that's fair. That's about the long and short of it, man.
I mean, if I saw you out at the flea market and you were 50 feet away from me going up to a table where I knew they had this game, I would run back over there and grab it just so you wouldn't have to see it.
You know what? I'm trying to think. The cover art. I might keep the Game Gear case for the cover art to display it and then just never put it in a system. Because the cover of this game's not bad. It's got a 1996 vibe to it, and I can appreciate that.
Yeah, it is pretty good.
Yeah, so cover artist, you did all right. It's got a green Mojo, which is weird. But it does have Shard and Cyclops and Havoc and Wolverine all like blasting off of the cover out of a TV set. So honestly, I think the cover of this game actually does a much better job of telling you anything about the Mojo world than anything else in this just horrible, horrible system. It's bad.
Also, I do want to mention briefly that Brazil got this game on the Master System because the Master System stayed alive down there for a ridiculously long time. I didn't look at that version.
I bet it's the same.
It pretty much is, because Game Gear is pretty much a portable Master System anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I figured why bother.
I did find out that there is potentially a sequel to this. The Game Boy Advance game, X-Men Reign of Apocalypse, starts as the X-Men are returning from their journey in the Mojoverse. Which I'm assuming just makes it a legitimate direct sequel, because it is a side-scrolling beat-em-up. Probably made by none of the same people.
X-Men Reign of Apocalypse.
Well, that one was developed by Digital Eclipse, published by Activision. And I don't see any producer, designer, anything like that names.
No, but I'm headcanoning this bad boy.
Oh yeah, because, I mean, it's X-Men. Headcanon the shit out of everything. Let me do that again.
Exactly.
Because it's X-Men, headcanon the mess out of everything.
Exactly.
I promise not to get you back for that one.
Please don't.
Unless you really want to.
I really don't. I honestly should have picked the Quake game. I should have picked the X-Men game that's just Quake with X-Men.
Well,
that at least would have been like a game, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's always X-Men Destiny.
You know, I have that. I got through the first level and stopped playing it because of my Wii that I have it on was upstairs, and I normally do things downstairs. I keep telling myself I need to finish it.
I put it in my 360 long enough to make sure it worked. and I haven't been back.
Yeah, from what I could tell, it's not good, but it does succeed at being a video game better than Mojo World.
We can successfully say that it is not the worst X-Men game I will ever play. Because this one probably is.
Absolutely. This one's got your goose here.
So if people wanted to hear about good X-Men things, do you have any ideas where they could go on the internet to find it?
Yeah, you could probably go over to XavierFiles.com. That's where I've got all the latest and greatest in X-Men news, media, entertainment, whatever. It's also where my podcast, Battle of the Atom, is hosted, where we talk about three different X-Men stories every week, and we rank them from best to worst of all the X-Men stories of all time. It's actually a blast. If you knew some of the words that I was saying in this episode about different X-Men things, you're probably already my target audience. Like, if we mentioned Shard and you were like, oh, hell yeah, or oh, heck yeah. You're going to want to check that out. Or on Twitter at Xavier Files, that's where I talk about stuff.
We'll have links down to those in the show notes, because clicking links is easier than trying to spell things.
It is.
If you want to find more from me, you can head on over to Twitter at Play Comics Cast. There's a Facebook group at playcomics.com/Facebook group. And don't forget that if you want to support the show, we have a merch store and a Patreon. Links to that will be down in the show notes. Your support would be greatly appreciated if that's something you want to do. Don't forget that when Kaylee and I actually have time, which really needs to happen, oh my god, Julie's gonna kill me, that we do Meddling Kids, where we look at Scooby-Doo and everything that makes Scooby-Doo great, including Scrappy. I don't care what you say, Scrappy was important. Fight me.
No, Scrappy's bad, actually. Scrappy's horrible.
Scrappy is horrible, but important.
I'm on team no one likes Scrappy.
I'm on team Scrappy was important. Fight me. But he was also really bad.
Ooh. He was just not good.
Don't forget that Play Comics is part of the Guinea Geek Network, home to such wonderful shows as Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., where SP and Haley and Lauren go through the Marvel-based TV shows, which pretty much at this point is what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., because Netflix and Disney stopped getting along and it made me sad. But the show is really good. Both their podcast and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so you should go listen to it. New episodes there get recorded on Wednesdays. You can go check the live thing, because it's really awesome. And if you like the music that we're rudely talking on top of right now, go check out Best Days Music at soundcloud.com/best-day. But most of all, just grab a game that's not this one. Please, dear God.
Yeah, don't do that to yourself.
Yeah, just don't.
Or, like, go outside. Just, like, enjoy the fresh air, baby.
You know what? Grab a stack of comics, go outside. Just skip the game, because we've already scarred you for life here. Go find yourself a new favorite character in the sunlight, because that's good for you. Yeah, the Play Comics is part of the Guinea Geek Network, home to such wonderful shows as I Can't Read the Screen in Front of Me. Also, don't forget that Play Comics is part of the Guinea Geek Network, home to such wonderful shows as Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., where holy crap, what are my contacts doing? That's a much better show than I forgot to open the tab.